So I let Marcus do the first call, and I can do the second one. And it's we are just going to talk about locked hearts. So as everybody kind of comes back in, we'll just go ahead and get started here. One time, John Regeer, he shared this, and I've always admired this story, but he was doing a conference. I think he was in Atlanta. I'm not really sure. But there was a 15-year-old girl that sat in the back of the sanctuary, and she didn't really want to be there. It was kind of like her parents came, and so she sat in the back, and as he was up talking, she was just started, had a pad and was doodling, and he started talking about locked hearts. And during that whole session, she's kind of sketched this picture and describing her own heart. And you can see the heart's got a crack down through it. It's got chains over it. It's got a clasp on it. And then there's a key over to the side, and it's broken. And it says, "Nobody will get my heart." I had a girl one time that came to my office, and she didn't want to be there. She was early, or probably, I would say, around 17. Her mom brought her, and really kind of with the idea that she was a troubled teen and just wanted me to fix her daughter. And like I said earlier, I can't fix anything. I can't fix anyone. I can't fix a problem. I can care about it, and I can try to understand it, but I can't fix it. But what we do seek to do, if we can get a person to track with us, we try to get them to Jesus, because Jesus can fix problems. He can take care of it, and I'll talk about that more tomorrow in just going to him in prayer. But this girl came in. She sat down, and I have these office chairs in my office. She sat down in one of the chairs, and she rolled it all the way back against the wall, put her arms up like this, and said, "I just need to get something straight with you right now. I don't open up to anyone." And it's like, okay, what do you do with that? I knew she didn't want to be there. Kind of really describes the same way that this girl was. It's like something had happened. Obviously, there was heartache or hurt to the point that she didn't feel like she could trust anyone to really open up and let them in. The girl that was there, just to give you the kind of the short of it, we did talk with her a little bit. It was kind of interesting how that, just in talking to her about how things can happen, and sometimes people aren't aware of how they may affect you, and I just tried to share with her just some of the experiences that we have seen and how people have been damaged. And she got real quiet, and she sat there, and she really, it was obvious that it was, she was listening, it was resonating with her. But it was short-lived. She left, and she didn't want to come back, and that was kind of the end of that. David experienced emotional pain. He described his pain. He said, "My heart is severely pained within me." And really, the Psalms are full, just full of David expressing the feeling and the challenge that he had in his heart. He said, "My heart is stricken and withered like the grass, so that I forget to eat my bread." And when the heart is hurting, and I think anyone who's ever experienced any kind of heartache or just a deep grief pain, it can really have an effect on you, and it just sort of knocks the wind out of your sails. I think David was experiencing that. He said, "For I am poor and needy, and my heart is wounded within me." There may be other reasons, but I've listed 12 reasons here that we can't show love, or something that will block our heart, or like put those chains around it to where we won't let anyone in. The problem when we protect our hearts and say, you know what, I'm not going to let anyone in, no one's going to get close to me, is we put this protection around us. The problem is nothing really gets out of us either. And so we kind of forfeit the ability to really be able to connect with someone else in that. One aspect of a locked heart is a hostile locked heart. If someone has been really driven and they're angry inside, I had a guy in my office, and he had him and his wife had kind of, they were raised in the church, but they had kind of left the church. They kind of lived a very loose lifestyle. They were married. During that period of time, they still kind of partied. And then they had their first child. And that kind of opened up their eyes, and they decided they wanted to try to offer something more to this child than what really they felt like they had gotten. And it took them a little while. The wife was the one that really led out and started it, but they started going to a church. They ended up having three children, and they then soon joined that church and was a part of that fellowship. And they committed their life to the Lord. They jumped in, all in. And they lived, fellowshipping with that group of people. One evening, the wife had a really bad cold, and they were sitting at supper, and she said, if you guys wouldn't mind, if you could clean the dishes up, I'm going to run up to the drugstore and see if I can get some kind of decongestant so I can sleep better tonight. She went, but she never came back. On the way back, she hit a semi head-on, and it killed her. This guy's relaying the story with me, and he's sitting in my office, and he said, I'm going to be honest with you. I am very angry. I am very angry even at God. It's like we surrendered it all. We sold out. We gave it all for you. And this is what then is happened as a result. And I think you can kind of understand a little bit. We know the right answer in all of that, that God is sovereign. God does all things well. And we have to come to a place in our own heart to where we can submit and yield to that. But he was angry. I think sometimes we get kind of hard on Miss Job when she looked at her husband and she said, why don't you just curse God and die? But honestly, you think about how would you feel if all of a sudden someone came to you and said all of your posterity has been completely wiped out. They've all been killed. No family, no children, all died. And within the same hour, someone comes to you and says, don't even bother going to see about any of your assets because all of your assets have completely been diminished. You don't even have a bank account anymore. You've got no way to make a living. And then within the same hour, you're struck from head to toe with these blisters or boils that just leave you in excruciating pain, like having a sentence of a terminal illness. Now, how would you feel? Don't you think just a little bit, maybe slightly down inside, you'd begin to wonder, God, what did I do to deserve all of this? Now, we can sit here intellectually, and we know the right answer, that, God is God. And we've got to just be able to yield to him. But sometimes our heart doesn't always feel that. That's the way this guy was. A heart sometimes can get locked up and it can be hostile. He said, for 6 months after my wife died, I lived numb. And then all of a sudden something come over me and I just didn't feel like going to church. My prayers were cold. The Bible had no meaning. And I just walked away from it. And he said, it's not where I want to be, and I know it's not even where I should be, but it's where I found myself. Now, what do you say to someone like that? I can't bring his wife back. I can't change the circumstances in their life. But he's angry inside, and he's very bitter, and some of that is directed toward the Lord. Some of it was directed toward even friends that were good-meaning people and just trying to offer comfort, and yet he would look at them and say, how can you say anything? You haven't been where I'm at. And he just closed it up, and his heart was locked because of anger. A person can become defiant to where they won't listen. I had a couple in my office once and spent the whole week, and we focused a lot on her issues. And the last day, we really made a concerted effort to try to encourage him to open, to share. And he had a thing all week. He was a very expressive person, and we'll talk about pressures tomorrow. But all week he talked about, he just talked, and he would capture the session by talking. And finally, at the end on Friday, I made an effort to try to get him to open. He began talking and wanting to rationalize and wanting to debate with me. And finally, I said, you know what? I think we've really hit an impasse here. And I'm not sure that we're really being effective. Maybe it's just not the right fit. Maybe somehow you've lost respect for me. I don't know what may be going on here, but I really don't feel like that it's something that is going to be beneficial for us just to proceed with. He sat there real quiet, and then he said, you know, it doesn't do a fellow good, really a lot of good, to hear that someone's given up on him. Actually, before he said that, his wife turned and looked at him, and she said, I knew it. I knew it would end this way. You never listen to anyone. And he didn't. He grew up in a home. He had a very dominant father. One time this boy stood with his father. They were at an auction sale. He kept tugging on his dad's pant leg, and he needed to go to the bathroom. And his dad was talking to some individual, and just wait. Finally, he couldn't hold it any longer, and he relieved himself right there, standing with his dad. Then his dad got all over him and jumped all over his case. He said another thing about my dad. He would play games with us, but I never remember my dad losing one time. He always won. I just looked at him. I said, you had a good teacher, didn't you? You've always got to win, too. It's like you can't relax and you can't let anyone in. You've always got to be controlling everything around you. If you're not, you're starting to feel insecure. And you won't let anyone in close. And it can lock a heart. And it can prevent a person really from experiencing everything that God designed for them. And that can enter in into a marriage to the point where a spouse won't listen, or you can't tell them anything. Anytime you ever try to say something, they become defensive, or maybe they'll put you down in some way. And we'll talk about that more tomorrow. A neglected, locked heart, where someone never gets any attention. I remember a lady one time saying that, you know, she was an adopted girl, and she grew up in a family. She said, they really loved me, but I was always kind of like the one that there never was enough. I remember going to an event once, and they had a nice table spread. It was a ladies' event, and they had all this nice china, and the table was just really decked out well, and they had people's place names on there. And she looked around, and the host said, oh, I forgot that you were coming. And she said, that's the story of my life. Another lady one time shared that she grew up in a very large home, a large family, and there really wasn't a lot of money. But she had an aunt, and the aunt aunt, however you want to say it, not aunts. But anyway, she would go to take these trips, and when she would come back, she would bring gifts. And one time she brought back gifts for all of the nieces and nephews, and she brought these dolls back for the girls. And she was giving them all out, and when it came to this girl, she didn't have any left. And so someone just said, oh, you can just play with so-and-so's when they're not playing with it. And it just causes a person to pull back and feel like, and it's feeling, I know. And oftentimes the whole response is, hey, suck it up, will you? Just get over it. Why are you going to bellyache around and complain about it? But I'm going to tell you, those things do affect a person. And they just start noticing stuff that's happening around them. And it can start to have a bear on them or weigh on them in some way. And it locks them up. And so they're unable to open. The little illustration I use with my wife, if I wouldn't take the time, you know what the right response would have been? For me to look at Shirley and say, you know what, you're right. I've had some pretty extreme cases down there for the last 3 weeks. And, yeah, it's been draining, but you feel neglected, don't you? You know, those people really matter to me, but they don't mean anything to me like you do. and I don't want to lose your heart. Why don't you put dinner on simmer? Let's go over and sit down here on the couch, or let's go out on the deck, and I'd just like to connect with you because I feel like I'm losing something with you, and I don't want to lose that. You're the most precious thing to me that God has brought to me, and I want you to feel that. I want you to experience that. I want you to see that I'm willing to take the time for that so that you don't feel neglected. You know what will happen? We'll sit down together, and then my wife will open up, and she'll start saying, you know, we ought to take a look at the schedule, and I wonder if we could somehow schedule off some time where we could just have some you and I time, or maybe figure out a way that we can just get away together so that we don't neglect each other. Self-focused, locked heart. It's a heart where we start focusing, everything is about me. Everything always affects me. And everything always has a way of coming back to my situation or what I'm experiencing. I had a couple in my office about 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago. Very depressed man, very self-absorbed, had lost his job, had been done wrong by some higher-up authorities in the field that he was in. And he had put together this case and was trying to present it, but that got thrown out, or it looked like that it wasn't going to really make any difference. Spent a lot of money, a lot of time. He sat in the office, and you could feel the energy immediately. He would sit down in a chair, and it's like, how are you doing today? Oh, man, this was a terrible day. It was just negative, negative, negative. And really, his wife was there. It was a last-ditch effort. She was making a concerted effort to try to reach this guy's heart and to try to express to him that she is drained. The energy's gone, and she has nothing more to give. And as he keeps insisting that the focus be on him, he's not giving anything back. And she was being very patient. She wasn't being unkind. She wasn't giving him a vendetta or drawing a line in the sand. She just expressed that to me, that I'm tired, and I don't know that I can go on existing like this. You know, he came in, and we were going to focus on some things, and he was so so expressive, and that the day had gone so terrible. I said, would you mind if we just focus on your wife's heart? And we led her in a prayer. And we just talked to the Lord in a very personal way about things, and she really connected she even mentioned how that Jesus really had been her mainstay. It was her lifeline. It was really her connection and all that she had to hold on to. And if it wasn't for him, she didn't know where she would be and what would have been her case here. You know, he sat there. He was very depressed. But as she was praying, I noticed that he started to firm up in the chair. I noticed the chair started to swivel some. He reached over and he picked up very firmly a clipboard, and I noticed him starting to write. He was no longer this depressed, downcast, melancholy, woe is me type individual. He was writing, and he had a purpose. He wrote the paper. He laid it up on my desk face down. I didn't notice that he had done that. We got done praying, and he got up and said, I've got to get out of here. He walked out. So I looked at her. I said, what's up with that? She didn't know. I said, do you think he'll come back? She didn't know. And they had driven separately because she worked in town, and he had came from another area or another place. And anyway, he went out. I looked out the window. He's sitting out in the car. And so I go back to sit down, and hadn't hardly sat down, and we heard the car start, and he drove off. And she texted him and wondered if he was going to come back. He said, I left my note on Danny's desk. So she picked the paper up, turned it over, and he had written on there. And he had written a whole paragraph of things. But you know what he said? He said this, I heard you praying to Jesus. I heard you really connecting with him. I heard you really give your heart, pour your heart out to him and give your all to him. He said, how am I to compete against that? Now, how about that? Self-focused. Totally all about me. And it's kind of like, I never heard anything like that before in my life. It's like, come on, give me a break. I mean, Jesus is big enough for all of us to love him and open our hearts to love others too. I mean, but he couldn't see. He couldn't see through his own, the blinders that were on. He was a self-focused individual. A rejected Lockhart. There's a lot of people that are rejected in life. There's a lot of folks that walk feeling like that they've been overlooked, that there's no one that really notices or sees them, a feeling that there's no respect, there's no one that it really even matters to if anything would happen to them. And so there's a lot of folks, and I'm not going to go, you know, I could spend all evening telling you different accounts of situations. A morally locked heart. This is a situation to where someone has gotten involved in something that morally they've defiled, or they have gotten so corrupted, or in a way that they're exposing themselves to things that are blocking their ability to connect. We give people a TJTA test, and basically when a person scores low sympathy, which means that they can't show love or they can't express it, then there's a real question, you know, is there something that's blocking that? Because typically when a person is in moral failure, when they're in pornography or if they're in something that is inappropriate, they can't love hardly above a 3 to 5%. Because you can't focus on two things at the same time. It's hard to look into someone's eyes when there is something else that is corrupting that. And it's a terrible thing, and I get really, this is a time where I really get passionate, and I'm going to tell you why. We live in a day today where we are inundated with everything that is sexist thrown at our face. And it kills, it destroys intimacy. Sometimes people think, well, why are you getting so down or so hard on some of these areas in a person's life? And one of the reasons I do, especially in marriage, is because it totally rips apart the ability to be intimate. And that's what God designed, that to be something that was holy and sacred, to be a means of expressing love that comes from the inside out in sharing with each other. It's not just some act. But people get morally locked, and then they can't focus, and they have no interest. And they have other things that will tend to draw their interest and their attention. And it can take them away. Intellectually locked hearts. An intellectual locked heart is where someone cannot go in their heart. And professionals, many professionals are trained to be intellectually locked. If you have a surgeon that's about to operate on your brain, you can't have that man starting to cut and then looking at you and wondering, well, I wonder if you're a grandpa. I wonder what this grandson is going to think, or a grandchild is going to think, if I'm not successful with this surgery. They lose their focus. So they have to block out that emotion. You take someone in the military, for instance, and I believe you're a non-resistant people like I am, but someone in the military, if they're out there on the combat, in the combat zone, and they see an enemy, and they pull up their weapon to take that enemy out, they can't start thinking, well, I wonder if that guy's a father. I wonder if he's got a wife at home. Well, I'm thinking about my wife now. And they're just going to fall to pieces right there on the battlefield. And they won't be able to do their job effectively as a soldier. So they're trained to block their feelings, their emotions, to lock it up. And so we do everything from the head. Everything becomes an intellectual exercise. It's hard to go anywhere with that because it becomes all factual. A defiled locked heart, that's where someone has been taken advantage of. Maybe they've been abused in some way, and it's caused them to shut down, and they can't open up. It's not safe. They don't feel comfortable. a dominant locked heart. That's where someone has to be in control of everything. They have to be the one that is the boss and taking charge. When they're not, then they feel insecure, and they start becoming, when they're out of control, they start to become a little bit more shaky and challenged inside. A driven locked heart. We see a lot of people that are this way. You and I that come out of like Anabaptist cultures, we're taught a good work ethic. We're taught to work hard. And I believe it's good. I probably haven't done the best with some of my children, especially. And I remember even as a young boy having to get up early in the East and go out and hoe beans in the garden. And it was muggy, and it was like pulling teeth getting me out there. But we're taught to work. The problem, and there's nothing wrong with being industrious. It's a good thing. But if we work, or if we're driven because there's pain inside, and so I'll just work to cover all that up, or if I'm working to find my sense of value, that if I don't get this amount accomplished today, then there's something that is off kilter here. And because we might not be able to achieve that level of expectation, we may not be able to can 100 quarts of beans in a day like someone else can. And it's okay, because God isn't assessing a person based on that performance. He's accepting us where we are. But a person becomes driven, and in that drivenness, they become locked, and they can't relax. A lot of times what I'll do with a couple like that, where you have one person that's driven, they can't relax. And I just had a couple there last week, not this week, but last week. And I'll have a spouse. I just like an exercise for you to do when you go home tonight or when you go to the hotel, whatever. I want you just to hold your spouse. I just like for you to hold them just like you would cuddle one of your children. Just tuck their head over against you and just hold them. And I want to see if you can love them just through that touch. And I want to see then if they can relax to let you. Can they start feeling something from you? You know, it's amazing. The couple last week, he said, "That feels weird." He said, "I'm not used to that." As a matter of fact, he said, "I'm just, you know, we never showed affection in my home. And hugs and just anyone even touching me makes me feel just a little uncomfortable." And so we will check usually why. Why do you feel uncomfortable? Did someone do something to you? Did something happen to you? Is there something you experienced? And maybe you don't remember something. And if there's nothing, I don't go just digging and trying to make something, but we'd like to check. Because if there's something there and we can figure out a way, or we can identify it, you know, when a person behaves a certain way and then they start understanding a little bit why they act like that, it really can be eye-opening and bring a lot of relief that, wow, so I'm really not crazy after all. I'm not that far off. I can see why that I start doing this kind of thing. Spiritually locked hearts. There's a lot of people in our society that have been wounded, that have been damaged by an authority that comes from a spiritual platform. And I say that with all due respect. I've probably even been guilty in some way stepping on someone. But I think there is a number, an awful lot of people that close themselves up and they can't respond. There's a lot of people that are walking probably in this community, I know there is over in Missoula and in the Bitterroot, that have walked away from church and they're not going back. They don't want anything to do with it. There's a lot of people that have said, "I believe in God and I'm not rejecting God, but I'm done with people." And they've walked away from that. But they close themselves up, and even when it comes to reading, devotions, or anything spiritual, it's really a challenge for them. They get uncomfortable, and it's hard for them to connect. And a judgmental locked heart. It's where nothing is right. Everyone is doing something wrong, and they're always pointing the finger. And they're always criticizing something that's happening. David wrote, and he said, he heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. That picture, that girl stayed. She kept coming back. And later in the week, she drew a picture of her heart. And this was nothing. There was nothing formal. No one was taking time with her. There was no counseling. There was no. She just sat there and she just listened to the message. But she sat there in the back and she doodled this picture of her heart being unlocked. And you notice the picture. The chains are all off. The key is laying next to the hasp, the clasp, and then the break down the middle of the heart has all been stitched together. And there's a needle and a thread off to the side. And God healed her heart. She expressed it just in drawing this picture. I believe God can heal every heart. I believe he wants to heal our heart. We use this chart sometimes just to describe how that we put a wall up, and we shared that in that last little session, how that there can be a heart that's been damaged, and it's been so damaged that it's unable to see another person or to see another's need for love. And they can't open up. That's the way this case with this guy, that he couldn't see beyond. You know what happened? I'll give you a little. This was really, it was an inspiring account for me. The guy went home, and I asked this girl, this is the one that said that, how can I compete against Jesus? I said, are you going to be okay going home? Do you have people that you can be in touch with? That is he going to be okay? And she thought that it would, but she assured me that she had other people, and so she went home, and she came into my office the next morning. I was seeing them in the afternoon. She brought this letter that he had typed up and written, and it was basically a signing off letter. That it looks like that, you know, our paths have went different directions. There's just no hope for us. It's all over. So while she's standing there, and she's showing me the letter, and she says, actually, I've already went and talked to a lawyer about a legal separation and what that would entail. And she was basically out the door. While she's standing there, he texts her and says, are you going to go to the session this afternoon at Danny's office? And she's like, why? Why would we even go? So she texted him back and said she wasn't planning to be there. And she told me, she said, I'm not coming. This was hurtful. It was painful. It was enough that she just didn't feel like that she could come back and face that. So he finally just responded and said, well, whether you come or not, I'm coming. So he came in. He was all distraught. He sat down and plopped down in the chair, and he was just heavy-hearted. And I said, what would you like for me to do? He said, I need you to call my wife and get her back over here, and she'll listen to you. And I said, I can't do that. You're the one that used your own words, and you wrote her off, and she's called your bluff. He looked at me and said, did you tell her to do that? I said, no, I didn't. I said, she was already there. She really was reaching out to you. You know what he did? We sit there for about an hour, and we just kind of sort of just bantered back and forth with his issue. He had a wall up, and then finally he looked at me, and he just broke down, and he started crying, and he said, what I seen my wife get yesterday, I've always wanted that. I don't know how to connect with Jesus like that. I don't know how to get there. I wasn't raised a Christian. I never had a dad that really even took any time with me. He said, would you help me? He said, would you help me and would you teach me just as if I'm like a 2 or 3 year old child? Because I don't understand. I try to read the Bible and I can't get anything out of it. I said, sure, I'd be willing to help you. He said, would you mind if I swing my chair around on your side of the desk and I can just sit over there close with you? And we did. We spent the next hour and a half. And we just kind of read scriptures, and what does that mean? What do you get out of that? What's that really saying? And it's like, I'm not a theologian. I'm not someone that can, that I'm going to tell you that I have all the answers to every scripture. But what was more important to him is someone taking the time to listen. He really opened up. The wall came down. I seen it. I asked him, would you mind if I lead you in a prayer? Sure, whatever. I don't really know how to pray. So we just prayed. We prayed, and I forget what all we prayed, but at one point, we just simply asked, Jesus, would you provide a safe place for my heart where I can just rest and have peace right now without trying to figure everything out? And he got this visual, just this mental picture. He said, you know, what came to my mind when we prayed that is I remember being at my grandmother's funeral, and she was a Christian lady. My parents weren't, but I remember being my grandmother's funeral, and I just remember hearing the preacher. We were there at the grave, and as the preacher finished praying, it was a cloudy day. The sky opened, and there was just this ray of sun that came down from the sky, and there was a little vase of flowers there, and it just highlighted that vase of flowers. And he said, I remember thinking such warm thoughts and feeling so close in that moment. And he said, that's what I thought about just now when we prayed that. That guy left, and I called his wife. I said, I don't know where you are, and I don't know if this is really something that is real or whether he's just playing a game. But I said, when you go home tonight, you be the one to decide. He's planning to come back tomorrow. He said, I'm coming back tomorrow, whether she comes or not, you know, regardless. And he came back the next day, and she came too. We had them facing each other, and for the first time in years, he began to notice her and talk to her in a way to where she really felt something from him. She admitted it. She said, I see it. It's different. I haven't seen him like this ever. And it's like, I don't know what's going on here. And it wasn't anything that I was doing. It's nothing more than what God can do in the life of an individual. You know, when that boy told me, it doesn't make a guy feel good to hear someone say that they're giving up on you. That really planted something deep in me when I heard him say that. Because I'm not one that really gives up quick. But with him, he was so defiant, I couldn't get in. And I finally had come to the point where I just threw my hands up and said, you know what, we've hit an impasse. But I've thought about that a number of times since and realizing that, you know what, God doesn't give up on us. He just stays right there. He doesn't move. And he hangs right there with it, and he wants to open our heart to heal. I'm going to give you this little, kind of a little illustration. Just kind of a way that we can react or how we can interact with someone else. So we tend to talk and we function through our intellect, but the feelings that we have in our heart, there are hurts that are there. And we carry those. Oftentimes when I see a couple married, and we just did a wedding ceremony a couple weeks ago, or it was actually a week ago, right? Anyway, when I see a couple stand up in front, I've never been to a wedding yet that I felt like that was really an ugly wedding. Everybody has different taste. Everybody does it different. But there's always something about it that's just highlighting it to be a very special day. And the bride is always beautiful. The groom is handsome. They stand up in front of a crowd that's there or maybe a small little gathering. But we see all of the splendor of it, but what we fail to see that these two individuals are wearing these backpacks and they're packing baggage into this relationship. And oftentimes what happens is when they get into this relationship, they start unpacking some of this baggage. But we tend to just, like that wall, we just pull a switch and we put something over top of all the pain inside. And no one's going to get in, just like that girl drew about her heart. We block anyone from getting close. As a matter of fact, I've got a little sheet that gives about 17 different ways that we can respond to protect ourselves from someone getting close to our pain. And One of them is very obvious: anger. You can just get angry. If you try to approach someone and they get angry with you, whoa, you're going to step back. Unless you're a very dominant person, and neither one is going to give, someone's going to get a black eye. Something's going to happen. But typically, if you get close to someone and then they get angry, they're going to back off, because they don't want you getting in close. So a person tries to open their heart. You take a spouse in a relationship, and a wife will try to open her heart up to a spouse. And in doing that, he won't let her in. So he just blocks everything off, and he tries to intellectualize, or let's reason about this, let's talk about it. And so we'll just talk about these things, but we really won't go deeper with it. And we operate out of our head trying to reach our spouse's heart. And that usually is always going to meet resistance. It's like, I don't need you talking at me. I don't need us discussing this. I need for you to be able to speak into me. And I want to feel you interested. I'm not just so interested in the fact of the matter. I'd like to be able to feel that you are really into this, that you're here with me. It's like, hello, I see what you're saying, I hear what you're saying, and yet it's like, you know, Earth to Danny, where are you? And so anybody that tries to approach it like that, you're going to block it off. You're not being sincere. You're not real. I don't feel you really are caring about this whole deal. So we block and we won't let them in. But what we got to do is we've got to find a way in the back door. You've got to be able to come in. I have a couple I don't know if they're going to show up. They live over in Vancouver, British Columbia. In their early years, they were successful individuals. He's been a rock and roll drummer, and he looks like one. He's a real thin guy. He's got hair down to here, but he's a professing Christian, but yet he's way off. In he has a lot of things that have really been taken into his life that has affected him. He went on a tirade. I've seen this couple last year, and for 25 minutes he went on a anger fit like I have never seen. As a matter of fact, I sat in my office and I thought, what am I going to do with this? And I looked at the clock and it was about 5 o'clock, and I was sure hoping that the people that occupied the offices next door, that they were gone for the day, because the volume was up and he wasn't saying really nice things. And so I just listened. His wife was sitting there and he was just spewing out. And finally, he just kind of threw his hands and he walked out. And so I asked her, what do you think? Is he going to come back, or what's going to happen? What he said is, you know what? I feel like just going over to the airport, getting a ticket and flying home, and you can drive yourself home. That's kind of how he left. So it's kind of like, this is the first day I'd met them. I'd only met them probably 2 hours prior. So we ended in prayer, just to make it short. She went out, and pretty soon, so I was kind of packing some things up. Pretty soon I heard my front door open. He came in, sat down in the chair. He said, I owe you an apology. I said, no, I could see an area where I had really messed up and I had overlooked. And I thought I owed him an apology, and I could see why that maybe it really set him off. No, I owe you an apology. I should have never talked to you like that. And we kind of apologized, but I asked him then, I said, why did you come back? He said, because you were being so kind to me. Why were you doing that? I just said, well, because I care about you, man. And he just kind of shook his head. He said that he didn't know if he'd ever remember anyone in being treated like that would still remain and be so kind. it opened up a back door. They spent the whole week there. When they left, his wife was the one that made the appointment. He said, "We're coming back." Now, they're scheduled to come back here real soon, and I just got a call saying things are really on the rocks, so whether they show up or not, I don't know. We'll just have to see. Coming in the back door can open up a heart, and it can bring those walls down, and people can start connecting with each other, and you can have a relationship. 2 Thessalonians 3:5 says, "May the Lord direct your hearts into the love of God." That's really where we want our hearts to be. We want to be able to experience God's love for us and be a channel through which it flows out of us to each other. And when we can experience that, there is nothing like it. There's nothing that is more powerful than the power of love. Let's see, I'm not sure if I've got a... Do I have a video here? I don't think I do. I think that's all I had on that. Let me look here. I think I'm done. Aren't you glad? Yeah, that was the last one. I had a frame here that I had kind of blocked off. But one thing I would like for you to do, I don't have those. When you get to the end of that section, there's some questions, I think. They're like heart questions, not hard questions. They're heart questions. Aren't they in that little workbook? Yeah. What I'd like for you to do when you go home, when you leave here tonight, I'd like for you to take some time and just focusing on each other. And don't make this some kind of a pressure exercise. If it don't work or you're not open or if it just, hey, you know what, this is way too heavy or too maxing me out, then just stop, because I don't want you to trip up on it. But I would like to encourage you to take those questions and start listening as your spouse would answer. Just ask those questions. Just use it kind of as a prompt to start a conversation that goes deeper than what we typically talk about just on the surface. And just see how that goes for you tonight. And you don't have to do it all, but I would just encourage you to just open your heart to each other and just start asking those questions. We never are, no one ever outgrows the need to be loved and to experience that in a way to where you actually can feel it. God designed it that way. I believe he wants us to be able to experience it. It's not something superficial. It's not something that is just intangible, that's just out there and lofty, and it's a neat, novel idea. Something that he wants us to be able to experience. And honestly, we can do that really on a daily basis. So may God bless you, and thank you for just giving me the time here tonight. I did mention to William, but and all the ministry team here, it's just I'm humbled that they're willing to open up this pulpit for me and sharing with you. And I want to honor you in your service and just the shepherding that God has placed upon your heart. And I want to be respectful to everyone here. Sometimes we'll show some of these little videos and stuff, and it's really the point or the principle in it that I'm after, not as much maybe even some of the comments that are made. But I hope that in some way that it can resonate within you and that we can find some benefit in what we're trying to express to you here. So may God bless you. And I think, are you going to close this up here, Marcus? Yeah. Marcus will come up, maybe have some announcements, and hopefully we'll see you in the morning.